Check, check, check. Okay.
Cool.
It's a go.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Rocking the tasty.
Yeah. Have you been here before?
No. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's really good.
Hey, what's up, diner buddies? My name is John Kim Fay, and welcome to Talking at the Diner, the show where working musicians and creatives tell me their stories over a tasty dish of their choice. Tasty. What a great word. And a great name for a diner. And it was at The Tasty in South Philly where I met up with Katie Hackett. Katie is an artist I've been wanting to sit down with for a long time. Her art rock project, The Lunar Year, has taken different forms since its inception in 2017, when Katie was essentially writing dreamy, piano-based songs, up to the present day when The Lunar Year is a ferocious rock and roll band that incorporates numerous shades of Katie's impressive talent. If you've not heard The Lunar Year, they sound like this. But wait, they also sound like this. Don't kiss strangers, especially entertainers, cause their girlfriends aren't home, yeah, their girlfriends are not home. In my conversation with Katie, I found her to be a super interesting and introspective person whose unique journey as a working musician really captivated me. I left The Tasty feeling inspired and excited about what's to come for Katie in 2024 and beyond. In addition to being the driving force behind The Lunar Year, Katie is also a co-creator of the Sweet Juice Fest, a now annual all-day music, art, and food experience entering its third year. I had the opportunity to attend last year's Sweet Juice Fest, and it was, for me, honestly, one of the best shows and best days of 2023. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Katie Hackett of The Lunar Year, right here on Talking at the Diner. Everything is on the table when we're talking at the diner.
Hello.
Can I help you?
Yes, please.
So you can take a seat in the dining room.
Okay.
Wow.
We got
this
the whole
place. I know.
Shall we go
pick
in this little corner?
Pick a booth. Number two.
Yeah. Go in like the reclusive corner spot.
I know, right? This is great. So you just came from work?
I did, yeah.
Where do you work?
I did. I'm a nanny.
Right on.
So I work with like a couple different families part time throughout
nice.
The week. Yeah.
That's great. How long have you been doing that?
Over 10 years, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, that's been like my day job gig for a pretty long time.
That's great.
Yeah.
Have either of you ever dined with us before?
I have. Yeah.
I have not.
Welcome. Our full menu is vegan. Do you have any food allergies or diet restrictions
nope.
other than being vegetarian or vegan?
No. Okay.
Fantastic. When you're all set to order, you'll just come meet me up at the front counter.
Okay.
All right.
Great.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because I feel like I actually know a lot of people who do like childcare work who are also artists.
Really?
It seems to be like the part-time day job gig is either like in restaurants or you're kind of like doing like dog walking or like
yeah.
house cleaning or something like that because it's kind of easy to make it flexible.
Yeah,
yeah.
I gotcha.
So this was my avenue.
That's
so.
A good avenue.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to be a dog walker back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of do like an all-inclusive thing where it's like I can take care of your kids, I can also dog sit for you, I can clean and organize your house,
mm-hmm.
and I'm also a postpartum doula, so I can...
I read that somewhere.
I can do that as well.
Wow. So the existing kids and
yeah,
then the new
so
kids.
Yeah, so just like give me a card and I can do it.
That's awesome. That's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And are you full-time vegan?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How long have you been doing that?
Pushing 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was vegetarian before that. and it just seemed like the natural progression for me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, almost 5 years.
Gotcha. That's cool. Well, I think I may try the pancakes.
I get a coffee too. I'm like, it's working with a 2-year-old, or no, 1.5-year-old. I'm like, oh.
Wow.
They're fun. But yes. On days like that, I'm always like, okay, 3rd, 4th cup of coffee. Let's go.
What time do you have to like be up on a day like today?
Not too early. Depends. Like today I went in, just I had a short shift, like 9 a.m.
Okay.
And it's pretty close to my house. So
that's good.
Not too bad, yeah. What did you get into today?
I mean, this is pretty much the beginning of my day.
Yeah.
I hosted an open mic night in Westchester last night.
Oh, yeah. Which, I saw that.
It's really nice. It's super fun. The space is a non-traditional... It's not a music venue. It's a co-working space that used to be a bank.
Okay.
So the room where the performances happen is this big, cavernous kind of room. But it sounds great in there. Everybody who plays there is like, I've never heard my voice sound like this. You know?
Wow.
And it's really fun. And
that's
it gets a nice kind of variety of people and... I was talking to a good friend of mine who attended last night, and a bunch of new people came, mm-hmm. and at the end of the night, you could just see, like, this big circle of people, like, all exchanging their contact info, and
that's
I was like,
nice.
That's why you want to do stuff like this, you know?
That's
so
true.
It was really cool. It was a fun
wow.
night. However, a late night.
I could see those tend to go late sometimes.
Yeah.
That's so sweet though. I love when people get to connect with each other.
Yeah, it's really cool. And there's a lot of really talented people who maybe aren't in a band, mm-hmm. and they don't have that side of doing music going on. So like open mic nights provide this little place for them to just kind of be part of something cool.
Wow.
You know, which I like.
That's
it's fun
really
to do.
Nice.
Like years ago, I was like a full-time open mic host.
Yeah.
50 weeks a year at Dobbs on South Street for 5 years, and then I did the Khyber for a year, like right before that. Actually, that stopped because of 2020. That ended in March of 2020. Like I do this open mic in Westchester like 4 times a year. It's just, it's quote-unquote seasonal.
So
it's fun.
That's so cool. Wow. What a cool gig. I did an open mic once or twice a long time ago at World Cafe. It was like one of my like first things that I ever did before I had a band.
I think that's like one of the most eclectic ones out there.
So I think I know what. Yeah, we were just kind of.
We were just chatting.
Oh, no worries. And you can just come up to the camera. Okay. When you're all set. I just wanted to make sure you didn't have any questions.
Thank you very much.
I think I'm good.
All right. You ready to order?
Yeah. Shall we?
Let's do that.
All right. Let's do it. I'm gonna get the tofu, egg, and cheese. And then just a small cup of coffee, too.
For the tofu, egg, and cheese, what kind of bread would you like that on? Do you have cards or rolls or muffins?
I'll do a muffin.
Plain or everything?
Plain.
Can I get the blueberry pancakes, please?
Sure.
With a side of the tempeh bacon.
What would you like to drink, if anything?
I'll stick with water, please.
Great. Okay. Great, you're all set.
Awesome, thanks.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Back to our little corner.
Back to your corner.
It's fun to find like a... I love that about diners. I used to hang out in diners all the time when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
Back when you could like smoke cigarettes in them.
Oh, wow.
And I would just like sit there like with my friends at like 3 a.m. and we would be like smoking cigarettes, drinking like our cups of coffee, and it was always like on like the, you know,
the furthest,
like,
the furthest possible.
Yeah, we were like, okay, our parents like don't know we're here.
Yeah.
And we could be bad and like drink coffee in the middle of the night and smoke.
I think that's what the allure is of the diner for me. Not that I ever smoked, but I just love being somewhere where it could be 3 a.m. and you could just be hanging out. And, you know, like, I've had the best conversations of my life in that setting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of why it's such a fun thing to just return to that setting, you know.
Totally. Yeah, that's awesome. Because it feels like a place that you're supposed to have like long conversations.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of nice.
So, I've seen you perform like 3 or 4 times total. And, but it wasn't until recently that I started listening to your recorded work.
Oh, yeah.
And from where you began your recording career in, what was it, 2017?
Yeah, that sounds right.
To now, well, when I saw you at Fringe the other week, I was in awe of how seamlessly you can kind of transition between just being like this ferocious band and front person to these very delicate moments. Mm-hmm. And I guess when I started listening to your recordings, I was like, oh, you kind of started in that more delicate space.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'm curious as to, was there like a conscious flipping of a switch that put you where you are now in how you perform, or take me through that.
Yeah, I know. It's quite different, the things that I used to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there was a conscious switch, for sure, where mm-hmm. I don't think that I intended on, like, now I'm going to make, like, this kind of music instead mm-hmm. of the old kind, but I definitely wanted to, like, push myself mm-hmm. more, and I was really craving a different kind of awakening yeah. of my mind. And so my older stuff, I think, was very reflective of, like, a certain era of my life. And mm-hmm. maybe kind of came a little bit easier because I wrote as more, like, diary entries. Yeah. And it was still very poetic, but it was, you know, my first instrument, which was piano. Mm-hmm. And then probably the switch started to flip when I was like, I am going to learn how to play guitar now. Uh-huh. And then I was like, oh, this is really cool. I want to play rock and roll music.
It immediately puts you in that mindset.
Yeah.
Just by putting the instrument on.
Yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, this is really cool. So
that is cool.
But I appreciate you noticing, you know, switches in our live set, because I still feel like, even though that was, like, such a drastic, mm-hmm. Drastically different time period for me, that's still part of me and, like, reflection yeah. of my musical history. So in, like, reciting my poetry yeah. in the middle of our sets, like, I've just been trying to incorporate that side of mm-hmm. myself as well, so that it's not completely lost.
Right, that's cool, because I think sometimes, yeah. This is actually true of me to a certain extent. I mean, I've been doing it for 35 years or whatever, but the stuff I did at the very, very, very beginning of my musical life, I couldn't see me incorporating that into what I'm doing now. And I just, yeah. I mean, it's different because it's just like, I don't think I became a writer that I would like until the third record I ever made. Mm-hmm. And so, and I do still play music that I did from that point on from time yeah. to time. But I could see that it might be possible, like, if someone makes a pretty drastic stylistic change and or direction, like, maybe there's, like, a sense of, like, disowning the past, but you don't seem to be doing that.
No.
Which is cool.
Yeah. You know? I think there was, like, a while where maybe I was, like, a little bit in denial of it, but, like, mm-hmm. not enough to, like, change my name, obviously.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
then after a little bit of this, like, denial of, like, no, I'm not that person anymore, I was like, well, if I'm truly not that person anymore, then I should just put this project to rest and then start a new one. Mm-hmm. But I really didn't want to do that, so I was like, all right, there's definitely, like, a way to weave this together.
Yeah.
And I think that I like it now more that I kept the name.
Yeah.
And I have, like, that musical history, because I also like a story. I like when bands have lore.
Yeah.
And so it's fun for me when I love a band to look back and be like, oh, yeah, their first album was like this, and now look at how, like, what they do. It's totally
right.
different, or it's, like, evolved in this really cool way. So
I think you've described the Lumiere as art rock.
Yeah.
I think that's the perfect umbrella to contain all of these things.
Definitely.
Because it's all feasible under that.
Yeah, know, definitely. That's cool. That is kind of why I called it that. Mm. And there's also bands that I really relate to that are under that genre, maybe like, you know, Velvet Underground, mm, that are like, that's, I think that they would be art,
well,
rock.
Well, you know, I think when I saw you at the Dolphin, it was like the fundraiser night,
oh, yeah,
for Sweet Juice Fest. You guys had this moment where like everybody's just on their knees messing with their pedals.
Oh yes, yeah.
And in that moment, I remember thinking like, this is kind of like Velvet Underground at the Factory, kind of a vibe, pushing the
boundaries of noise,
yes,
and what music
and what,
is.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which was great. Like I loved that moment. And so yeah, I mean, what other artists did you like grow up listening to that you think still influence you today?
Definitely the Beatles. My dad was a big Beatles head, which is like everybody, but I mean,
yeah,
I'm like obsessed still. Mm-hmm. What else? Yeah, we loved like Elton John. My dad was a musician, or is a musician too, so.
Oh, really?
Definitely.
What's,
yeah,
he play?
He's a really great singer, plays guitar, piano. I think he first played drums, so
right,
he's got like a really intuitive like musical ear, so
nice.
I think he like kind of dabbles in like a lot of different instruments.
Oh, that's great.
So
drums was my first instrument too.
Yeah,
and
that's
I really want to, I don't own a kit anymore, I have nowhere to put it really.
Yeah,
but like one of my little dreams that I have is that I want to like be in a new band where I'm the drummer sometime.
That's cool.
I don't know if it'll happen. There's a release that the drummer gets to have that,
yeah,
is next level during a show.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, actually that's one of my musical goals. I love drums so much. I actually really wanted to play drums at first too, but then I was just like such a more of a natural at singing. So I was in choirs for like 13 years,
oh,
of my,
wow,
life, from the time I was in like third grade until like I was done with school. Sometimes Adam will show me some tips and stuff.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, I gotta like,
that'd be me. Thank you.
Eventually, when I have more time, I'll definitely, I want to pick it up a little bit more consistently and actually teach myself a little bit.
Or maybe you could incorporate a thing in the show where you start playing the drums and Adam comes out.
That's a great idea.
Sings a song.
I thought that. I'm like, what song could I maybe play drums on? I'm like, I don't know. He's such a good drummer. But we'll have to see. Thank you.
And then do you want hot sauce and ketchup for your sandwich?
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
Another thing I kind of noticed about the band, I mean, I don't know Adam super well, but I've interacted with him a few times, and, you know, he played with my old friend Maddie for a while, Madeline Gauze.
Oh, yeah.
And so I really love his personality foil with you,
mm-hmm,
in this. He does most of the talking.
Yes, yes.
Which, yeah, I think is really cool. And so, like, I think that just adds, for me, it adds to the allure of your band for me, because you come off as a very serious artist, especially when you're performing, and but you have, like, a little bit of element of, like, he adds, like, a little humor.
Cheekiness. We always say he's the cheeky drummer, yeah.
Yeah. And that to me is cool, you know. Like it really gives like a very interesting vibe to the whole band.
Yeah.
And then I'm a big Sam Nobles fan, like that guy.
Who isn't?
Yeah, who isn't?
yeah.
And it's very cool to, you know, I've seen him, you know, I've seen him play with Shug. I've seen him play with a few other people. Like, his versatility is just out of this world.
Yeah.
And to see him in like a full-on like ferocious rock band is like, to me,
yeah,
like the coolest thing.
That's,
you know?
Awesome. I know. Yeah, I'm glad that translates well.
Mm-hmm.
That like Adam does a lot of the talking, because I prefer that, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I do like when a, like, I like when I'm at a show that it really feels like I'm watching a show.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, the it's transitioning from one song to the next, or, you know, there's some kind of bit that's going on. It's like, I love theater, you know,
yeah.
So it's like, I, of course, it makes sense that I would then do that and, like, with my own project on mm-hmm. stage. It also is just kind of more reflective also of our personalities, where I am naturally a little more introverted and reserved,
mm-hmm.
and I really speak through my music and my writing.
Yeah.
And then Adam has a really, like, charismatic personality.
Yeah.
So then after a while, I was like, you know what, you should just...
you should just talk
about the merch. You do a way better job, because I always forget.
Right.
I'm like, oh yeah, we have merch, and then I, like, don't sell anything. I'm like, somebody else needs to think about this.
Right. That's awesome. But that's very cool.
Yeah, I love the band. It's been very good.
Tell me about this year's Sweet Juice.
Oh yeah, Sweet Juice Fest. Well, I can't reveal too much.
Okay, yeah.
but we are going to throw it, and we just did settle on a date, which I don't have permission to share, but it is in July.
Okay.
So, I'm sure no one would care if I did, but we all collectively, like, make decisions
together.
So I love Sweet Juice. I can't wait. We're trying to do more events too.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe like smaller ones, not like a ton of them, because mm-hmm. we're also all musicians and artists. And
yeah.
We have our own projects and are sure. in other projects too. So we don't even literally have time to be like a booking, you know,
right.
unit or anything like mm-hmm. that. But we are trying to do more. Like events throughout the year besides our flagship event, which is the festival,
yeah.
the big thing.
So, what's the origin of the festival? Like, was it your brainchild, or did it happen in a discussion with the other people involved, or?
It was sort of magical, really, because I was playing a show at the pharmacy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they are in operation anymore.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not sure, but
I've been there a few times, but it's been a long time.
Yeah. So I was playing a show there, and there was another show going on at the Dolphin,
mm-hmm.
which is like a couple blocks away. And both of the lineups were like all like femme and queer mm-hmm. lineups. And we all kind of, like, some of us have shared, like, bandmates, like, mm. we were talking about before, where, like...
So people are running between the two.
Exactly. So we were kind of coordinating with them.
Mm.
And then, strangely, which was a total shock to me, maybe somebody knew about this, but our friend Katie Briggs, who has done the food at both of the Sweet Juice Fests, they came in with a bunch of extra food from, like, a catering gig that I believe the Bunny Hop did. And so everybody was, like, fed at the gig, which
is this the
great.
Person that was responsible for those tofu burgers last year?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
They're so good, aren't they?
They're
amazing.
It was great.
I love Katie's food. But, yeah, so there was this, like, moment where me and one of our collaborators, Mel,
mm-hmm.
we were like on either side of like the table where the food was, and we kind of were just like, we should like make this like a thing. Like, we should like throw a big show
mm-hmm.
where there's like food and like combine these lineups, basically, like the exact same lineups. And it was like Shug, like Emo Space Bird,
mm-hmm.
Flo, and like our lineup, which was about me and like, forget who else, but yeah, and we were like, oh yeah, we should, and then we started developing that idea, and then we were like, well, wait, that's kind of like a festival, because we have like 6 or 7 artists, and mm-hmm. we have food, and it's going to be all day and outside, so then we kind of just went from there, and we kind of made it available for like anybody who was on the fest lineup to collaborate and do it with us. This was for our first year, and mm-hmm. like everybody kind of contributed, and it was like, you know, if you want to be like a part of this, you can. If not, it's also totally fine. We just like want to throw a show, so like whatever.
That's great.
Anybody wants to do. So eventually it ended up being like the four of us as a collective, and then we decided to like make it more of a thing. So mm-hmm.
it was great. I had a blast last
yeah.
year.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
Yeah, it was totally fun.
I had the, I don't know if you saw last year's giant juice box.
I did see it. Yes.
So I currently have that in my house. I just found a really, it's moved spots times, but I found a really good spot for it in my living room corner. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at it the other day and I was like, this makes me so happy looking at sweet juice. Like, it's such a day filled with joy and
yeah.
like, total bliss and like really good art. And I'm like, this is nice. I love looking at this. It's like blessing my house.
It was, I mean, I've never organized a festival, but I have organized like 7 band bills in my life. But just for you guys to take it to that level, I can only imagine the amount of work. And,
yeah.
you know, it's got to be like a huge mental undertaking, and also just like getting the nuts and bolts of it together.
Yeah, it is a lot. I mean, it's so joyful, the planning process too, though, like where it's definitely a lot of work. We've been having meetings like every other week pretty much, every two weeks, but it's cool to see how like we really want to make it sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And so none of us have ever done it either, so we're always trying to like learn how to, you know, practice that and mm-hmm. in the right way, where mm-hmm. we don't just like do it, you know, for like a couple years and then just completely burn out.
Right.
which is like what happens a lot. And so
I'm sure
keep it going. I mean, yeah. definitely we'll let it live like it's whatever lifespan it mm-hmm. is.
Right.
Not push it. But yeah, we don't want to get burned out. So
right.
it's nice working with a collective of four though, because mm-hmm. when somebody's burnt out with our own music project or too busy, then there's three other people who can kind of like compensate.
Yeah.
Which inevitably like one or two of us at a time are like, I'm too tired to do this. Can you do this? But it's been cool to see how it's evolved too as an idea, where at first it was kind of like this, you know, block party feel with just a party with like our friends. And now we think of it as definitely, we think of it as an art installation,
mm-hmm.
Where it's almost like not even just has the identity of a music festival, that it is like an art piece of a music festival. Mm-hmm. It's like an imagined world that
yeah.
you can walk into for one day. So we kind of want to expand that idea too, and do that with our smaller events as well. Like
nice.
Make them each its own like art piece with a specific motive and theme and things like that.
Nice. Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's really great. What's the schedule for the release of the new project?
New stuff, yeah. So we're pretty much, we're finishing the record right now. We started in, was it November? Yeah, I think it was November. We've been at Headroom a lot. Like since November, just like recording.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Who are you working with there?
So we brought in our friend Justin Nazario from Sound Splitter Studios.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard of him. He's done like the Tisbury stuff and like.
Nice.
I think he did like Root Ruby and some other, maybe like Wax Jaw too. But he's done a lot of mixing for me, where I would do like. In the past, like just kind of like random projects, and like he really knows how to work well with my voice.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of just like set up shop and rented out Headroom and brought him in, and we've been just going. Like he's great. We had a couple sessions that were like very, very long, and I appreciate him sticking around. So we're like, let's go all night.
The marathon, yeah.
Oh yeah, we had a definitely marathon session.
Do you know the guys who own Headroom at all?
Yeah, I know Kyle. Napoli. He's my buddy. And so he'll be in and out and kind of like peek his head in and check out what we're doing.
Kyle and Joe were both my students at Drexel years and years ago.
Oh. Wow.
And I literally just ran into the two of them. And this, did you ever meet a guy named Ryan Schwab? He's like a mastering guy.
Yeah. I've had a couple things mastered by him. I don't think we've ever met in person, but chatted via email. He seems really nice.
I was at Oscar's bar recently, and these two dudes that I did not recognize, with like, you know, long hair and stuff, they're like, John Fay? Like, yeah.
Was it Kyle and Joe?
Kyle and Joe.
Oh, wow.
And I kind of recognize Joe because we're connected on social media, but like it's wild because, you know, I hadn't seen them, either of them, for probably, I mean, they've been out of college for like almost 15, 16, 17 years.
Right, yeah.
So they're like both like 39 or something now. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, whoa. Oh my God. Like, that's these awesome kids that I knew when they were like sophomores.
Wow.
It's pretty wild.
That's so cool.
It is cool to kind of get a chance to see where people that you were connected with when they were at a very early stage of what they were trying to accomplish, and just see, like, I mean, they've really done a lot of great stuff, which is, you know, I mean, obviously Joe plays in Hopalong and Algernon Cadwallader as well.
Yes.
So it was pretty fun to catch up with them.
That's so cool. Yeah, I've never met Joe, but I know Kyle, and I'm trying to think when I first met him. I got brought in to do a couple, like, work on a couple records. Mm-hmm. I think, like, probably sometime last year when they moved to their new location. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think, when we kind of met, maybe, like, kind of knew each other from social media. But, yeah, we're buds now because I've been there, like, all fall and winter, so I see them all the time.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great spot that they have there.
I would love to check it out sometime. They invited me to drop by. I don't know when I would have occasion to do this, but...
Yeah, you should, like, if you happen to be in, like, Derby for some reason.
Right. Hanging out in Derby.
Mm-hmm. But back to your question. Not sure about the release. We're going to try to potentially shop it around a bit. And see if we can get maybe like some representation or at least like some help with marketing.
Are you looking at like big labels or indie labels or?
Open to whatever would help us the most.
Yeah.
Probably both. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, could be really great to, you know, there's ups and downs to labels and everything. But,
sure. yes.
Yeah, definitely open to whatever's going to help the music. Mm-hmm.
But, are you self-managed currently, or?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, so I've been self-managed. I've been self-managed since 2017, so now I'm very excited because I'm like, okay, this is very hard. This is very difficult, and I feel like I kind of had to start fresh when I started on my whole awakening journey and switching genres. So yeah. I'm like, okay.
Well,
I need help.
I did notice, and this is not anything to overlook, like your number one song on Spotify has over 1 million streams.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I can't even fathom it.
Yeah, that one did pretty well. That was a crazy, people really latched onto that one unexpectedly. I did not think it was going to really happen like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, because it was a last minute addition to the album.
Wow.
to that first album that I put out, Herodias. And I, like, was working with my bass player at the time. And we would, like, he would, like, kind of produce for me, like, a home studio set up. And we were roommates, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember I was, like, trying to go to sleep the one night. And then I, like, had this idea for the song. And I didn't, like, play it or anything. I just, like, wrote all the lyrics out, which is kind of unlike me. I don't really do that. I usually, like, when I'm writing, it's... they kind of go together for me, where I find the melodies with whatever chords I'm playing. Mm-hmm. So that one was interesting because I didn't do that. And then I was like, oh, Zach, we got to, like, record this one. So we, like, recorded it real quick. And then it was, like, kind of the single of the album. And we, like, you know, we, like, pitched it to, like, playlists and stuff, just like we did the other ones. But there were definitely other songs that we were like, no, this is the one. And they were like, no, this is the one.
I am the worst person in the world at picking my own quote-unquote singles.
It's really hard because you're so emotionally attached to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... Yep.
I've never been right.
Yeah.
Ever.
So far, neither have I. So I'm with you.
Yeah, I'm working on putting a record out this year as well. And I didn't realize until, like, a few months ago that I haven't had, like, a proper, like, record out in, like, 9 years, which for me is, like, really, like, I can't even, like, wrap my head around it because, you know, I was pretty prolific for a pretty long time and then I just sort of stopped being prolific. But, so I don't want to put, like, too much internal pressure on myself about what this is going to be, but, like, I'm really excited just to have something more than just a standalone single again, because that was always the way that I work. Like, I do albums, you know, and this is against the advice of so many people that are like, nobody wants a full-length album anymore. Just do an EP.
I was just going to say that. You know? Like, you should do the album because everything comes back around to you. And you can have singles and an album. Like, you could... Yeah. There's so many different ways. I know people have told me that too because I feel the same similarly because I'm like, wow. I mean, I did put out, like, I guess, like a sort of underground album that's only on Bandcamp.
I noticed that. Why is it not... Why is it underground?
I don't know. I just, I think I was really mad at Spotify at the time.
Oh, my God. Let's get into that.
Because, I was like,
man, I got opinions.
Like, Spotify, I'm not doing this. And I think I released it. I was sitting on it for like a year or two. Mm-hmm. And it was during the pandemic. And I'm like, I'm not giving them my stuff, and then I just didn't, and then I always forget that it's there, but it is there technically. But besides that, I have just put out singles, and like the other album that I put out was 2017. Mm-hmm. So I've been like, I need to put out a full length record.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd like, I need that.
It's that tug, the internal tug.
I want to showcase the work as like a piece, not just individual. They can stand alone individually, but you know,
One of the songs from the is it Katy Bird?
Mm-hmm.
One of the songs is on Spotify, right?
Yeah, I actually do have like a couple of the songs on there, but it's for the most part. The other stuff is, I think it's just on Bandcamp and SoundCloud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm consciously trying to. If I have something that is on Bandcamp and the streaming platforms, like, I'm trying very hard not to just always default to listen to it on Spotify.
Right.
Like, why?
Yeah.
I'd rather direct you to somewhere where maybe you'll give me a dollar.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they really rob us, don't they? It's really terrible.
They not only rob us, but it's so... I don't know how you feel about the whole concept of Spotify Wrapped, where...
Oh, with, the giant marketing scheme that they have going, that we all are mad at them all year except for that one day.
Yeah, and then on that one day, we're all like,
It's like a...
We're so grateful for all these...
Yeah, I mean, they like love bomb us on one day of the year. It's yeah. like so toxic. It's a toxic relationship. It really is.
Telling you.
But like, we shouldn't feel... I don't mind, in a way, when people do share those things, because we shouldn't feel bad about like being proud of our music.
Not at
like,
all.
Like, it's just that like...
I feel like...
It's their fault, like, in the right. end, you know? Because sometimes right. people will take to the platform and be like, we shouldn't be sharing this, and I do agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I do understand that sentiment. But yeah, at the same time, it's really not our... It's not
no,
our fault.
Absolutely can, not.
Yeah. I think most people understand that.
Yeah. It's just the feeling of like, you know, this mega corporation is totally exploiting all of us, and yet here we are promoting them
yeah.
in such a like massive unified way on that one week period or whatever.
I know, it's amazing.
It's like
I know.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah, I do hate myself a little on yeah. that day every time.
But... Well, that's the artist's life, you know. There's yeah. a little bit of self-loathing, a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Yeah,
know.
I mean, it's hard not to, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sad that, you know, it's just been, it's like a tale as old as time, though. Like, artists, musicians, poets, like, we're always poor, we're always being taken advantage of,
mm-hmm.
you know. It's just been like that forever.
Why is that?
Just run by like capitalists.
Well, yeah.
But
I think it's partly like the person who is the artist, like their number one goal is to just be seen and share, and you know, so
yeah,
like the financial aspect of anything we do is never the first thing on your mind.
Totally.
So you're
I'm
willing to do
really
whatever.
I'm not good at it. Like, I'm really not good at it. You know, I've definitely tried to be better with, like, the business side of things, or, like, marketing and stuff like that. And I do okay, but it's really not easy for me, because I would much rather just be the one writing it all, mm-hmm. and then just focusing all of my mind on that. It's like when I was in school, like I was always like so intensely good at like art and music,
mm-hmm.
and then I was so intensely bad at like math.
Right.
And it's like, okay, it's still like a plot that is still my narrative and
yeah.
my life experience going into like the real world or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you grow up around here?
I grew up in like Lower Bucks
okay.
County,
mm-hmm.
This like little town called Trevose.
Oh, I know exactly where Trevose is.
Okay.
Well, I live in Jenkintown.
Oh, okay.
And
cool. I know where that is.
It's interesting. I learned so much about Bucks County because my son was a hockey player in high school.
Okay.
So all of these like teams that they would play, it's all over the place, you know, like Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
Trevose.
Yeah.
You name it.
Wow.
Up in Montgomeryville, okay. you know.
Yeah, well, I grew up in Trevose. A lot of people don't know what that is, but mostly, like, I guess,
street
like,
road.
Street road, I know. That was always, like, hilarious. My out-of-town friends, when they would come to, like, visit me or something, I'd be like, oh, that's street road. And, like, growing up around it, I didn't realize how funny that was as a name. But then they would always be, like, laughing. And like, oh, yeah, that is kind of funny.
So you grew up there. What was your early, like, experience with music?
Yeah. My dad is a musician. Mm-hmm. So definitely music-friendly house.
Mm-hmm.
We were, like, religious, so grew up in, like, church, very influenced by, like, hymns and stuff.
Mm.
Like, we did a lot of, like, old hymns played in, like, church music. I did do voice lessons. I did piano lessons when I was maybe, like, 6 or 7, and I quit that because I hated instruction, so, which was definitely a theme in my, like, school experience. I was like very not interested in being told what to do. So I'm a self-learner for sure. It's not even that I was like misbehaved a lot or anything. I didn't prefer to be like in a classroom.
Yeah.
And sometimes music teachers can be a little harsh, and I'm very sensitive. So I think that I, especially as a child, I was very sensitive. So I think I just like struggled with like the rigidity or whatever.
Yeah,
But so I quit that. I did do voice though for a number of years. I really wanted to be a classical vocalist because I was very into classical music. All my choirs did like Latin pieces and things that. And so I wanted to be an opera singer, but then I was like, this is a very intense lifestyle. And I just like knew that I wasn't that good. Like I was like good, I could have been better, but I wanted to be like more, like I wanted to write songs.
So do you remember like your first attempts at writing songs?
I'm trying to think, like I'm sure, I mean I was always like making songs up when I was like a kid, narrating my life and like singing all the time. There was like a year after high school that I was at home, and I basically like my dad had like a home studio in our basement, and he let me basically move down there, and I just pretty much spent like all day and all night in this like studio, and I would just like sleep on his the couch down there and like come up for air like for like a few hours of the day, but mostly I was down there just like teaching myself how to write songs. So it was like during that time period where I was like, all right, this is like I need to learn how to do this. And I would like occasionally drive to North Jersey. I knew this guy who was like a producer. He taught me how to use Cubase.
Oh, right on.
So he gave me a copy of it, so I'd be like messing around with that.
That's great.
But yeah, my dad had one of those, it was like the old studio equipment where you get like one take and that was it. So it was like pre-computer. So was
it like a tape machine or like a...
It was like a board, but it had like a floppy disk.
Oh,
and
yes.
Like, yeah, like you would, you know, I like recorded onto that and then, you know, one option for reverb, you know, and... If you didn't get it right, like, the first time, you kind of had to, like, you were kind of screwed,
just
you know?
Do it again.
So it was like, I had to become, like, a one-take wonder.
Hey, that's...
Which is a good skill.
That definitely comes in handy.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Eventually, I appreciated that. But that's when great. He would have me, like, record on his music and stuff, too, so... when he would write stuff and record down there. So it was always, like, a lot of practicing beforehand. It was like, okay, now you have to nail this take. That's
pressure's
all you
on,
have
Katie.
One shot. Like, and I'm like, okay.
Oh, my God, that's great.
Yeah. So,
I think that's really a cool thing when a child and a parent can kind of bond over music. I never had that opportunity, but so I'm very... observant of it when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of cool last night at the open mic thing, like two of the performers called their dads up to play songs with them, which was pretty nice. It was very wholesome.
That's nice. Aww, that's sweet.
Yeah, it was cool.
Wow. How many kids do you have?
I have two.
Do any of them play music or anything?
You know, early on they were both sort of musically inclined, and then they just sort of stopped being that. Like, I still have this video of my son when he's like probably in first grade, maybe. He expressed an interest in the drums, so I like bought him drums.
Cool.
And for like 20 seconds he's down in the basement playing this beat that I'm like, it was not like a simple 4/4. It was like,
it's
like, I gotta get a video of that.
You're really good.
Yeah, he never really wanted to pursue it beyond that. But you know, the thing about it with me is that like I never wanted to like necessarily force music onto my kids, because I didn't want to be that parent that's like, you're gonna follow in my footsteps, you know?
Exactly. That's good.
So I'm just letting them sort of be their own thing, And I think, you know, I wouldn't say that either of them are like voracious consumers of like music. Like they don't, you know, they just do other stuff.
Right.
You know, their generation has like so much more stuff that's like coming in, you know, like, you know, video games and
right.
online yeah. stuff and just being on Discord with their friends and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
right.
like I'm just, you know, but hey.
yeah.
What are you going to do?
yeah. Well, and sports too, you said, you mentioned.
Yeah, my son played hockey.
Sports and music are really, really similar, I think. Like, I mean, they're obviously different.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, it was definitely something to which he needed extreme dedication throughout, like, middle school and high school, because I mean, I'm the last guy in the world who ever thought that I would like A, be a hockey dad and also like enjoy it, but it was so much, it was cool because I was watching him do things that I could never do. Like the first time he skated backwards.
That's impressive.
I mean, he was like 10 years old.
yeah.
like, okay, I guess we're going to do this.
Yeah.
You know.
Wow. That's cool.
My daughter is a much more cerebral person. She's a really great writer. She's in her senior year in college with a double major in screenwriting and English.
Cool.
That was actually... like, if music never happened for me, like, I would have wanted to do that kind of thing. That was kind of where my head was at for a while, but then music kind of quickly circumvented that or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But...
I'm sure that side of you, like, influenced your music, too, though, because I kind of relate to that, where I actually was always more... I was always, like, so sure that I was a writer, not as sure that I was a musician, which is interesting that I have gone more in the path of music now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I probably did that because of, like, an insecurity. Even though I, like, liked singing, and it was, like, natural to me, I, like, never questioned my writing, where I was like, oh, okay, like, I'm good at this, and, like, I like it, and I could do this, like, forever.
I feel very similar to that.
Yeah.
Because I was... writing my scripts or whatever, and I had an aspiration to be a songwriter, but I couldn't really play anything.
Right.
So the first thing you do is you, like, well, I started to play drums, and then you find a couple kids in your school that play guitar that you can explain your ideas to so that they can be the translators.
Right, yeah.
And then... here's all my lyrics, you know, it's like in a little folder or whatever, you know. And it's so funny to look back on that because, you know, there's like no phrasing or meter to any of it, and you're trying to like make these into songs.
Right.
But that was my kind of entry point into it. And eventually, I think, I didn't pick up guitar until I was like 19. And then... as soon as you have like E minor and A, you're off to the races. You know?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't like until really recently been more focusing on my writing and like the poetry aspect of myself. Where like I don't know, it was like weird. I just so intensely like just needed to learn how to play music, and then I just went down that path.
Yeah.
It was almost like I, like, that part of me fell asleep or something until, like, last year or, like, the year before. I was like, wait, like, I'm a writer. I've, like, forgot that I'm a writer.
Yeah.
So, like, I've been trying to, like I said, like, incorporate that more into the live performances, too.
Yeah.
Eventually would love to, like, put something out in, like, a book, like, a chapbook, probably. But, yeah, it's interesting how they all kind of play together.
Yeah.
It's all, you're kind of drawing from the same pool of creativity, so it makes sense that you could, you know, do all of those things.
Yeah,
together.
I mean, I think it's, I look at myself and a lot of, like, my friends who I know through music, like, in a much broader way. Like, everybody's just trying to, like, do something creative, and whatever form that takes can be different on any given day, really. I think when I was maybe in my 20s, and like everybody was in a band, you know. It's something that like I've observed going out to shows and watching like the current crop of Philly bands. Mm-hmm. So many people, and this is the case in your band, they don't just play in one thing.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot. It's almost like there's just like a collective pool of creative people that are sort of mutating into these different things for different projects.
Right.
Which I think is awesome. You know, I mean, there is always like a camaraderie to like being in a band.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that when I was coming up, that sense was almost like militant. Like if somebody was like, yeah, I'm gonna go like do a gig with this other band, I mean, that's like, oh, yeah, verboten, you know.
Oh, like, right, you're like, how could you quit the band, man?
I mean, it's, yeah, you know, and that attitude seems to have dissipated for the most part, and yeah, it's, to me, it makes for like a lot more great art, because mm-hmm, people are able to, you know, take Sam, for example, like, he can express his talent in so many different situations, right, and how can that not be good for a creative person to be fulfilled in that way, as opposed to, like, this is your lane,
yeah,
you play in this rock band, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's kind of how it was with us when we were coming up. It's like, you know, this is what we do,
yeah,
you know. It was very much like the Ramones mentality, where it's like, this is a band.
Yeah, right.
And you do not deviate.
Yeah.
But now, I just think it's so fun to like see just people being able to express like multiple sides of themselves, you know?
Right.
Which is very cool.
Yeah. I think it definitely, well, at least with my music, I like it because I don't just listen to one kind of music either.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that like all my bandmates play in like jazz groups and mm-hmm, in folk groups and like all different kinds of stuff. And now like, yeah, with me, like in a rock and roll band, but that's also, we kind of bend between genres.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't have the like play with those players who like dip into all these other genres of music as well, like my music would be totally different.
Yeah.
And it would be kind of limited. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I approach too, like my songwriting, where I'm not just like, all right, I'm gonna only listen to like rock bands. Mm-hmm. I always try to like listen to like everything.
Yeah.
So that I can get as much information as I can to like write new stuff and like create a new thing that's totally unique, yeah, to me. So,
yeah, it's like,
yeah,
you're really just a student of music your whole life.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you're sort of like taking influence from things that move you, and you're just incorporating it into your thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's great. I feel like the batch of songs I'm about to put out this year is, for me, like the best example of that kind of mindset, because the stuff on there is like, it really does vary a lot, and you have moments where you're like, is this really a record, or is this cohesive enough to be something?
Yeah.
But then, you know, I always come back to like, well, it's all me. Like I literally played every note on this thing for the most part, and so people are just going to have to accept it or not.
Right, you know? Yeah. It'll be cohesive, yeah, because yeah, it is from you. And
yeah, yeah. I mean, it's my voice. It's my, you know, even though the songs might be, like, radically different from each other, like, there is a through line in that it's my voice. It's my personality coming through. And so as long as it sounds genuine to me, then what, yeah, else? What else can you do?
Yeah, it has your voice and your style. Yeah, I relate to that because I, as you've probably seen from the live shows, like I do have a lot of different, you know, a lot of different types of songs It's not just, we're not just like just a rock and roll group. So it's interesting, yeah, I'm trying to make sure that as a whole piece of work, that it, like, it sounds like one thing.
Yeah.
Instead of just a bunch of individual tracks. It's really tricky to do, I think.
It is.
You know. Why it's taken me so so fucking long. I'm just like, oh, I feel like people have been asking me, like, yeah, when's the record coming out, for like 3 or 4 years or something? And I'm like, I'm always like, I'm almost done.
Hey, my friend, you got this. Come on, you got this. I'm sure the new Lunar Year record will be well worth the wait. And you can stay informed on all the goings-on with Katie Hackett and the Lunar Year on Instagram at The Lunar Year Official. And you can also check out the website for Sweet Juice Fest at sweetjuicefest.com. Before I go, here's a little news about my new record. I'm predicting a fall 2024 release for my first full length in 9 years. Nine. And I'll be dropping the first of a handful of singles in April. And I cannot wait to begin sharing these tunes with you. And I appreciate all of your continued support. In fact, if you'd like to support not only this podcast, but also help fund the new album, I'm trying to put it out on vinyl, hint, 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 hint. Please join my Patreon, otherwise known as my Patreon community. I'm going to be shooting a lot of behind-the-scenes content surrounding the new record, and it's really going to be a fun year releasing this new music into the world. I hope you'll take that ride with me, and I hope you'll join me for our next episode. Until then, I'm John Kim Fay, and I'll catch you next time on Talking at the Diner. Talking at the Diner.